Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
For the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 232. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And it is Sunday night, and so we're going to get to a lot of good stuff here as we get ready for our Sunday night edition of the podcast. We're going to talk about a couple of articles by some premier national writers, and I use premier in quotes. I'm using the air quotes there for a Buster Olney piece and a Joel Sherman piece we need to talk about. We're going to talk about some of the great work that Phillies manager Gabe Kapler is doing, and also a big rumor that we all missed that just kind of came to light here on Sunday. But joining me first to break all this stuff down is Justin Clue, the managing editor of The Good Fight. You can follow Justin on at Justin_Clue on Twitter. Justin, how you doing, buddy? How was your weekend?
Weekend's good. It's really entertaining. Every year we seem to learn the same lesson. If baseball writers were trapped in a ski lodge after an avalanche, we would all have turned on each other and devoured each other, like maybe by the second hour. If you're judging by like the kind of stuff that comes out in the offseason, you know there's always going to be like just chewing the fat columns and what if this happened instead of this, or a contrarian viewpoint that always does. That stuff just fills the time between free agent signings, and it always amazes me that it never. You think it's that kind of stuff comes out in like January, but guys, don't wait. That stuff just dropped. You know, it's not even the winter meetings yet. Arizona Fall League just wrapped up, and we're getting just take after take after take, and it's incredible the way that they turn immediately to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, I mean, you got to find stuff to write about, and there's a demand for content, even though there's nothing really to write about. And, you know, we do this a little bit at The Good Fight, but, you know, generally what we are writing at The Good Fight, we tend to put some thought into. And, you know, we're going to get into some of these national baseball writers here and what they're writing and, you know, where some of the flaws in their logic are. And there are big flaws in the logic. There are holes you can drive a Mack truck through. We're going to get into that coming up here in just a minute. Also, Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports is joining us. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How's it going with you?
Things are good, John. Things are good. I turned off football and everything is right with the world. I didn't have to watch any more football than I wanted to.
Yeah, man. I mean, I, you know, you guys know that I joined up on BGN radio this year talking about the Eagles. And what really sucks is that I was co-hosting that podcast in 2016 when the Eagles kind of sucked. I didn't do it last year when they went to the Super Bowl. Now I'm back on it this year and they suck again. So it just, I don't know if it's me or if it's just some rotten luck, but.
Is it you?
I don't know. I don't know. It's, you would not think the coaching staff has more to do with it than I do, but, you know, I'm pretty self-centered.
Absolutely the coaching staff.
And the yeah, so anyway, you can listen to me rant about that on BGN Radio this week. But we're going to talk some Phillies baseball here because, frankly, hey, you know what? This would be a damn good week for the Phillies to do something, anything, because you know there's a lot of Eagles fans that are kind of going crazy, and obviously Sixers fans and Philly sports fans are really excited about Jimmy Butler and what that team's doing. But the Phillies can kind of capture a little bit of the town this week too, even over the next couple of weeks. Now that this Eagles season is kind of in the crapper, this is a chance for the Phillies to kind of get on the front page or the back page of the sports section. And we know that there's a lot of possibilities here. The winter meetings are coming up in a couple of weeks, and we're starting to see some very small trades happen around baseball, just one or two here and there. But I think the general managers meetings that took place a couple of weeks ago got the ball rolling on some things. And over the next couple of weeks here in December, we're really going to start to see some things happen, but we're not through November yet. It is only the middle of November, and we're probably not going to see anything till after Thanksgiving. So right now, we are left with rumors, and a big rumor that we actually missed. This rumor, I think, actually was first printed in a Cleveland newspaper at the beginning of the month. I think it was November 6th or something like that. It was on Cleveland.com. A Cleveland writer reported, Justin, that the Phillies have made a contract offer to Indians free agent outfielder Michael Brantley. Now, I love Michael Brantley. He was part of my offseason plan. If the Phillies were able to sign Manny Machado, I thought, well, okay, you sign Machado to play shortstop. You can go out and sign an outfielder. And, you know, that would still be a great thing to have happen. But interestingly, it seems as though the Phillies are interested, according to this report. Also seems like the Braves and another team are interested in Michael Brantley. He's a good player. I've mentioned his stats over and over again. A 300 hitter, gets on base, has decent power. About a three-win player. I mean, he'd be a great add to the outfield. But how much of this story do you believe, Justin? It seems a little early for a contract offer for a guy like Michael Brantley.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much of a lie, I guess, it could be. Also, it seems a little early for conspiratorial dealings as well.
I'm sure somebody told this guy something, but yeah, I mean, you know.
I hear you. And, well, I mean, at the same time, all we're thinking of when we hear a name at this point is whether or not they'd be a good fit on the teams that they're supposedly connected to. And the three teams that, were mentioned in relation to this particular, deal with Michael Brantley, I feel like, first of all, that's an indication of the three teams you're going to hear the most of. During the offseason, the White Sox have already made enough noise as potential contenders for the two main guys, for Bryce Harper, for Manny Machado, potentially for both. But yeah, who knows how real that actually is. And then the Braves, of course, are going to be all up in everybody's business. So I think this is a good preliminary starter's pistol as far as the main players in a lot of the deals you're going to see. Not necessarily succeeding at landing these players, but certainly like trying to involve themselves. And honestly, the Phillies should be involved with everyone. Like I don't know. I feel like, and I know we're going to get into this with some of the more prominent free agents in a minute, but it just feels like the situation for the Phillies is so different, so much more different than ever, that they should be just sort of wedging themselves into every conversation. And if they're offering him a deal, I mean, you know, what's the harm that comes with that it's an overpay for the Phillies, that they don't let they're deciding what the market is rather than reacting to it. I mean, from a player standpoint, Michael Brantley would be a terrific member of this line. He's exactly the kind of player they didn't have in Philadelphia all season long. That would have been tremendous to have a guy who regularly hits 300. I mean, he missed a lot of time in 2016 and 2017 due to injury, but came out this year and got right back on his Michael Brantley track and had one of his better seasons in recent memory. He has the power. He has the contact. He has the on-base percent that would have been just so much. Basically, the role that Asdrubal Cabrera got and didn't fulfill. He would have been tremendous in that role. So thinking of an outfield with him and Bryce Harper in it, with the third role being filled by, I mean, not whoever, but I don't know. That's a pretty terrific outfield. And that's a pretty solid middle of the order as well. And it's a good start for an offense that's going to be hopefully more effective in 2019.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, he hit 309 with a 364 on base and a 468 slugging. Only 17 home runs, but he's a big doubles guy. What I love about him is that he doesn't strike out, and that's what this team needs, is they need guys who don't strike out. He only struck out 9.5% of his plate appearances last year, and he'll steal a few bags here and there, too. 12 stolen bases this year for Brantley. He was worth 3.5 wins above replacement this year, according to Fangraphs. That would obviously lead the Phils, and you know, he's not a superlative defender. I think he can play left field or right field or wherever, I think one of the corners, but he's certainly a guy I know that you have said that you liked a lot and would be a very good fit for this team. I think even if they sign Bryce Harper, Liz.
Oh, I agree. I love him. I'm so thrilled that the Phillies made him an offer. Him not taking it, I have no idea what that means. If it means that he's continuing to wait and weigh his options, or if none of the offers were up to snuff, I hope the Phillies made him a serious offer, because he's exactly what they need. You know, I was looking at the 2018 Phillies, and you know, a lot of them hit more than 20 home runs, but Nick Williams hit 17. Nick Williams hit 17 home runs this year, and he hit, you know, 256. I love Nick Williams, but if I have to choose between Nick Williams and Michael Brantley, it's going to be Michael Brantley, because the dude missed he had a terrible injury in 2016. And, or what's it? I'm trying to remember which year it was.
The one it was 2016. You're right.
2016.
Yep.
He missed a huge amount of time in 2016 after a terrible injury, and hadn't. It was so early. He hadn't really had the time to get hot yet, you know. And then in 2017, he missed about half the season. But you know, aside from that blip, this is the player he's been since 2012. This is just. Yeah. I mean, he missed all that time, and every time has come back and been that player. So he's exactly who I want. I'm so thrilled that the Phillies are interested. And they just sort of went out and said, we want you, please come join us immediately.
Yeah, and this is a guy, too, that I could see if he landed on the Braves would just kill us, you know, game after game.
No. The Braves, no players, none.
Yeah, no, the Braves should not be allowed to get any players at all, but they are losing Nick Markakis to free agency, and, you know, I think that they are certainly in...
They don't re-sign him, though. I mean,
It seems like
I really feel like that's nuts, considering what he did last year.
Yeah, it's that would feels to me like a Braves move is to re-sign Markakis. You know, I mean, but you know, I certainly think Michael Brantley's a better player than Markakis and would be a huge upgrade for them and would be a big problem for the Phillies because this team. I guess let me ask you this, guys. I mean, and just let me ask you first because. How important do you think it is to have a 300 hitter? We talk about batting averages not being a big deal anymore, and that obviously getting on base, not making outs, is the most important part of an offensive player's job. Not making outs, that's the most important thing, and on-base percentage is the best number that tells you how often a player doesn't make outs. But we saw this year how not having a single guy with a decent batting average really hurts offensive consistency. When you don't have guys who hit line drives and get base hits and come anywhere close to a 300 average, it's a problem. And I think, you know, having a guy who doesn't strike out very much and having a 300 hitter, I think if you're going to be a good offense, you need a guy like that. You need at least one guy like that in the lineup who you can count on to say, hey, listen, when it's a 3-1 count, I got a pretty good feeling this guy is going to get a base hit and not watch a strike go down the middle of the plate for a 3-2 count. And I'm not saying that, you know, hitters shouldn't draw, you know, have long extended at bats and all that kind of stuff. I think that's fine, but you need to have, I think, in your offense one or two guys that can you would call a 300 hitter.
You know, there's this a tweet that sticks with me from a couple of years ago back when there was still a much louder battle between new and old school statistics and how valuable modern statistics should be considered legitimately by baseball. And somebody said, I wish we could just take all the David Eckstein scrappy players, put them all on the same team and watch them lose 120 games. And like the joke of that is like, I feel like there's no skill in baseball that if you got all the guys who did that skill the best and put them all on the same team, eventually you're going to run into a problem. Like if you try to have a team of guys who all just do one thing well, then yeah, you're not going to have a successful, like as a collective, that's not going to pay off. And I think that, it's a testament to the state of modern baseball that we're sitting here on a baseball podcast saying, you know, guys, I think a guy who in your lineup can get a base hit is really going to help your offense. that's kind of what a guy who hits 300 does. You don't need a lineup full of guys hitting 300. Obviously, if you do, you're not going to come down on anybody for that. But if you have a lineup based on the idea of getting on base, a lot of guys who know how to control the strike zone like the Phillies want, a lot of guys who draw walks, and then two guys, you know, who know how to knock them in, then I think you see a version of the Phillies from this season who actually is scoring runs and not just getting runners on base. It was almost comical the way that the absence of a 300 hitter or the kind of hitter you're describing was for this team. It was so notable and so noticeable. I mean, we talk about Michael Franco having a great season. He was the closest guy to that kind of hitter, and he was hitting 270. So
and he's on his way out. They can't wait to get him out the door. You know?
I think it'll be a brutal in the best possible way reminder of what an offense is supposed to look like. If the Phillies even just got one of those guys for next year, one Michael Brantley type, just sitting in the middle of their order, ready to knock the guys in who get on base. Obviously Carlos Santana probably won't be here, but I mean, we've talked for a great part of the season about what value he brings. And we talked on the last podcast about how we think he gets miscast as this guy who's got a big bat, but he provides a different service. And that service is valuable, but when you're missing, like, you know, the second punch or that 1-2 punch, then you're just you're gonna take more hits than the other guy. So yeah, I think that obviously a guy who can knock a few more extra base hits for you during the season is gonna pay off huge for your offense.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, last year the Phillies just didn't perform well when ahead in the count, and that's because I think you had a lot of guys in that lineup who, when they had a count that was advantageous to them, didn't know how to take advantage of it. I mean, I think the coaching staff got in their head about working counts and working the pitcher, where I don't think they were aggressive enough when they were ahead in the count 2-0 or 3-1. I mean, there was a stretch last year where I was on Twitter live tweeting games saying, okay, 3-1 count, let's see what happens here. And you'd either have a Phillies player foul it off or swing through it or watch a strike right down the middle. You need guys that know what to do when they're ahead 2-0 and 3-1 in the count. And those guys typically hit for a high batting average because they know that if a pitcher has the bases loaded or runner on first and second with one out, they're probably not going to walk you. You know, at a certain point, pitchers are going to stop throwing pitches out of the strike zone. They're going to come across the plate with pitches because they're not going to walk in 4, 5, 6 runs in a row. And so you need a guy who knows how to get a base hit here and there. And the Phillies didn't have enough of those guys last year. A guy like Brantley who can hit 300, or anyone else who can consistently hit 300, as long as he's, you know, not like Ben Revere where you're hitting 302 with a 320 on base percentage and a slugging percentage under 400, that's not the kind of guy that you want. But a guy like Brantley who does a little bit of everything and gets you that 300 average, man, that would just go such a long way in a lineup like the Phillies.
They need hitters. They need hitters. This is what they need. They need hitters. I mean, they need pitching, but I think they need hitting more than they need pitching.
Absolutely.
They have an ace. You can stitch together a season out of pitching. But if you don't have the pieces that can hit, it's just hard to win games, as we saw. They need hitters. If you want to move from here into Buster only saying that the Phillies should get a whole bunch of pitchers and punt on getting both Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, I'd be down with that, because this is exactly why they need a whole bunch of hitters. They need as many hitters as you can stuff into a team. It's a turducken of hitters.
Well, that was Liz's queen of the segue for a reason, and that dovetails nicely into our next topic, which is going to be a piece that Buster Olney wrote on Sunday, which most of you probably weren't able to read if you don't subscribe to ESPN Plus, which is I've never heard
reasons,
of.
Not because of the words.
right, for financial reasons, exactly. I don't have a subscription to ESPN Plus, but I got snippets of it, and what he basically is saying in his piece, he talks about how the Phillies can be smart spending stupid amounts of money, and he's obviously going off the John Middleton quotes about the Phillies are going to spend a ton of money this offseason, and that he said they might even spend some of it stupidly, which he backtracked on just a tiny little bit, but you know, the implication was clear, as you guys talked about in the latest episode of Continued Success, which, folks, if you haven't listened to the latest episode of Continued Success, make sure you check out Justin and Liz on that one. But you guys talked all about the Middleton quotes, and Olney is going off on those quotes and laying out his plan for how the Phillies would spend their money smartly. And the thing that caught my eye, and I'm sure caught your eyes the most too, is he obviously says the Phillies should sign Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, but that it would be foolish and I think he used the word, and maybe I'm misquoting him, but dumb if the Phillies signed them both. I mean, he was noting what would happen if both became hurt, or one got hurt and one underperformed. Now you've got all of this money, maybe $75 million invested in two players who aren't doing anything for you. That's a really big risk, and that it wouldn't leave you enough money to do other things that the team should do, like go out and sign a free agent starter. Olney mentioned signing one of Dallas Keuchel, Patrick Corbin, or Nathan Eovaldi. We can talk about the wisdom of any of those guys. Sign a closer like Craig Kimbrell and sign Marwin Gonzalez. I don't have a problem with some of that stuff, but I don't see for the life of me, Justin, how you could possibly say that signing Machado and Harper would be foolish. There's no world in which that makes sense, right?
You know, this is sort of a, this is a case of like taking one part of a debate and just turning it into a column. Like, and I think that's kind of what you're going to see more and more until one of these deals actually goes down, that like there's this big conversation with a million different outcomes. And an idea for something like this is just grabbing one of those potential outcomes and turning it into a headline like that. At some point we enter anything can happen territory. At some point you just, okay, sure. What if they acquire both of them? One of them gets hurt. One of them underperforms. What if tomorrow John Middleton walks out of his building and a supervillain sucks all the money out of his pockets with a hose? I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. That's, I hope that doesn't happen. What if they sign only one of them and then the other one has a really good season and the one they signed doesn't? I mean, that's just sort of kind of like what if thinking that like, wouldn't signing both of them increase the odds of them? You know, that like if you're worried about, we don't want to sign a big money free agent and have him underperform. Cool, sign two. Then there's half the odds that you're gonna blow right. it. That's you know, right. if anything, it's an argument to get both of them. I also didn't understand why the assumption was made in that. And that's the thing. It wasn't really made. It was just sort of that initial point about signing only one of them or not wanting to sign both of them. Followed by a couple of other ideas. I don't know. It read to me like, why was the assumption that they wouldn't also sign other players other than Harper and Machado? I mean, that's what's so wild about this Phillies team. I mean, they either I am underestimating how much money the Phillies have, or everyone else is underestimating how much money the Phillies have. I don't know who's right anymore. Like, my assumption going into this all the time is that the Phillies have cartoon limitless money. As soon as somebody made the first argument that like, why not both Machado and Harper? That said to me, okay, the Phillies' money is literally just not a factor. So they're just constructing a team with all of the players they need in a free agent class that has a bunch of really good players in it. It's not the most, you know, romantic way to build a baseball team, but they certainly are able to do it. And I don't know. Yeah, obviously, that after the Machado and Harper part, the rest of it was just like, yeah, here are some good ideas. Yes, they need starting pitching and there's starting pitchers available. Yes, they should really get a strong closer to shore up the back end of that bullpen, because that was also a thunderstorm of mediocrity that cost them a couple of games. Yes, they should have a guy like Marwin Gonzalez. I don't know if it's Marwin Gonzalez, but they definitely need, every team like the Phillies kind of team the Phillies are trying to be needs a Ben Zobrist. I can't imagine. Yeah. Like, Ben Zobrist is the spawning point for all of the teams that get managed the way the Phillies are trying to run this team. Marwin Gonzalez could be that. Other guys like Eduardo Nunez, Kike Hernandez, like those kind of guys show up on those teams all the time because they.
Josh Harrison is a free agent. That would be somebody like that. Yeah.
But these are the guys who play multiple positions and come through more often than like it's those utility players like Eric Bruntlett who they play a bunch of different roles, but their batting average is in the crapper and they don't get on base and they strike out all the time. Like, yeah, okay. How much do you really value that guy, even though his baseball card says he plays six different positions? In this case, we're talking about guys who can do that and be effective baseball players. So, yeah, you also want a couple of those guys, if possible, on your team. Unfortunately, I don't think a couple of them exist. They're like unicorns. But my point is that, yeah, why would you not? I think the Phillies are certainly going to look into signing a bunch of those players as well. That way they will have a better baseball team. So that column to me just sort of seemed, when you stripped it down to its bare point, he was just like, well, I'm just going to say the Phillies should only sign one of them on the off chance one of them gets hurt or underperforms. Like, okay. I mean, that's sort of a point, but it is, it's mostly just a what if hypothetical that like, yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It says to me, it's a better reason to sign both of them.
And Liz, I think the thing here is that we don't know exactly how far Middleton is willing to go. When I mentioned this in the piece I wrote for The Good Fight last week, when he's talking about spending stupid money, is he talking about being willing to go over the luxury tax? Because we hear people when they're talking about this payroll limit that the Phillies have, and Andy McPhail has talked about it to some degree, that there's a limit to how much they can spend. Well, the guy who's writing the checks doesn't seem to agree with the president that there's a limit. at least not in the public comments that we've heard so far. And so that makes me wonder whether or not the luxury tax is a worry for Middleton. And even if it is a worry for Middleton, when people talk about how much the Phillies were spending in 2010 and 2011 in order to keep the team and keep the window open, keep the team competitive, they're talking about when the Phillies had a payroll of around $170, $180 million. Well, this year the luxury tax was $198. It's going to go over $200 million here over the next few seasons. This is not a situation where you're looking at a 170, 175 limit. I think that there's a good chance that they would be willing to go over the luxury tax, Liz. That seems to me that Middleton, just based on his comments, doesn't care about that.
I completely agree. I mean, who wouldn't, based on the things that he has said, the words that have come directly out of his own mouth? Like, right. He does not care. He wants to win. You know, I think he sees, you know, the NL East, the Braves are good, but the Phillies stayed with them for a while this year. They had the NL Rookie of the Year on their team, and the Phillies stayed with them. Bryce Harper had a down year, and Juan Soto came up, and the Phillies were able to crush them for the most of the season. Not at the end there. But
yeah, the Nats eventually finished ahead of the Phillies in the standings. They did. Your point is well taken. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
They were able to hang with him for most of the season, and you know, the Phillies had some 300 hitters for a period of time. When they stopped having them is when they had issues. And so putting those guys on the team would certainly help this, putting both of them. You know, let's not forget that Buster Olney he's real ownershipy. I'm not going to call him an ownership shill, but he goes hard for ownership. You know, he's, you know, carrying water for the Indians. You know, wanting to cut payroll after very successful seasons. Like, for them to cry poor and just to say they're cutting payroll is bonkers. There's no reason for them to do it, given what every team brings in, you know, revenue, you know, in national, you know, TV revenue alone. Not to mention,
but you know what's funny is, though, he also goes all in on the tanking and how players aren't getting paid because teams aren't willing to put together competitive rosters. So he's weird in that he seems to vacillate back and forth.
He does, you know, but like, you can't, if you could figure out a philosophy of Buster Olney, let me know. I'll say,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, yeah, that's what I'm saying too.
Stories. I'm not saying he's a bad writer. I've disagreed with him on a number of things, and we've had online fights about them. You know, but I don't mean to disrespect him as a writer. I just think his opinions are not my alley at all, and I constantly disagree with them. So I'm baffled as to why he falls on these other ends. It's like I almost feel like he's been looking for a way to blame the players for tanking. I feel like there's
yeah, I feel like he's on the hunt for that story. Just some little nugget he can use to make that connection. He would love that.
Man. Well, what I don't get about this piece is that adding two Hall of Fame potential players in their age 25 and 26 seasons, if adding one of them is good, why would adding two of them not be good? Because you can still make other additions. And my whole point about bringing up the luxury tax was this. Buster Olney, we don't know what the Phillies' plans are. If they sign both Machado and Harper, I'm thinking they'll probably figure out a way to fill up some of the gaps in the rest of the team. My guess is maybe they pursue a pitcher on the trade market. Now, maybe they pursue a pitcher on the trade market that's making a lot of money, like a Zach Greinke or something like that, in which case, okay, fine, you're still paying a lot of money to a pitcher. But you also, you know, there are different ways to go about doing things. If we're talking about a team that isn't really feeling as if they have a limit on what they can spend, then you sign Harper and Machado. Everybody's working under the assumption that there's some kind of limit. And maybe there is. There probably is some kind of limit, but I don't know. I mean, I listen to John Middleton talk, and I honestly don't know how far that man is willing to go in order to bring a winner back to Philadelphia, how much he's willing to spend. I just think it's silly to say sign that there's not enough money to go around to improve this team if you sign both Harper and Machado. That signing these two generational talents who could combine to get to be 11 extra wins for this team next year, you know, I'm boggled about that. And that kind of leads me to the Joel Sherman piece that I wanted to talk about, guys. Joel Sherman from the New York Post went on and on in a piece this weekend about, you know, why are people talking so much about the Phillies? Why should they be the ones signing Bryce Harper and Manny Machado? Will that make them contenders in 2019? Let me read you a part of this, because this
please,
this is just
please
gold.
Read this, please. I'm begging
well,
you.
He talks about how much he doesn't love the Mets roster, and yet he would take that over the Phillies roster. He talks about the managers and saying Gabe Kapler is Bobby Valentine 2.0, undoubtedly bright, but giving off something that makes him polarizing. And he says, even if you would pick the current Philly situation over the Mets, is it buy enough that you would recommend adding Harper or Machado on $300 million-plus record-type deals? Maybe. Both are young enough that they could be part of transition years. But if the goal is to win right away, and it sure seems like that is what is on Middleton's mind, wouldn't the Phillies be better off spending $300 million on Patrick Corbin, Craig Kimbrell, Michael Brantley, and Josh Donaldson, or multiple players of that ilk to address a roster in need
Josh
of upgrading
Donaldson.
That many
What
spots?
Happens to people that suddenly the best players on the market for a team that can afford them and is willing to pay for them to not sign them? That's just is flabbergastingly stupid. I don't follow that.
Every team takes a risk with every player they send out there. The difference between, you know, a prospect, you know, or a young player getting hurt and someone that you're paying $300 million from getting hurt is one of them has tangible value.
Right.
Harper has tangible value to writers and to teams because he's being paid $300 million. Players who have not hit free agency theoretically have lesser value for no reason at all because they actually do not have lesser value. These players have value based on how they play. The market decides how much they're paid, but the market is not deciding how much other players are paid. I am so like if Aaron Nola gets hurt tomorrow, which God forbid.
Oh, don't even say.
I'm
go
sorry.
Outside, spit, and turn around three times, Liz.
Name me a young. If Noah Syndergaard were to again for the 8 billionth time, he hasn't hit free agency yet, right?
No.
If he were to get hurt tomorrow, Jacob DeGrom were to get hurt tomorrow, that would be a tremendous loss. It would be a huge crippling to, you know, the Mets' chances of doing whatever it is Joel Sherman thinks that they should do. With their manager, who, let's not forget, allowed an out-of-order lineup card to leave his dugout earlier in the year. Let's not forget.
Where does
that
measure up with the Javi Milner incident? Is that better, or is that worse, or better than that? Than that?
I think it's on level footing. I don't know if it's better or worse. I think it's, you know, at least here's the thing. I think it's worse because. When you're talking about the lineup card, you're in the same dugout. You know, you're like you would imagine that. Yeah, you're like when the Hobie Milner thing, you've got guys out in the bullpen, out in the outfield. It's not like you can see right in front of you. Oh crap, Hobie Milner hasn't started warming up yet. All right, I mean you could look over and see. Okay, there's the lineup card here. Let me give the lineup card to whoever was it Ruben Amaro who took the lineup card to the umpires that day? I don't remember.
I believe it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you give the lineup to Ruben. You can look at it, double check it real quick. That to me seems
assistant GM Ruben Amaro.
Right.
And, Mickey Callaway was a pitching coach. Gabe Kapler was nothing in the major leagues before this year as a manager.
Right. No, I don't understand. And he went on to say, and I didn't read this part. He says, not signing Machado or Harper at least keeps the Phillies out of the ultra long-term big buck risk that would come with Harper or Machado. And the Phillies have to think a little about future financial flexibility for many reasons, none bigger than Mike Trout, who grew up a Phillies fan, is a free agent in 2 years. Enough!
Turn in your BBWAA card. Turn it in and allow us to burn it in front of you. I cannot fathom. What have any of these people heard about Mike Trout wanting to leave? He's going to sign an extension so soon, and it's going to make everyone look so stupid.
How adorable would this league be if players were all just trying to get onto the teams they liked when they were kids? That would be if that was influencing them taking deals or taking pay cuts in different like terrible markets. Well, you know, the Yankees are offering me a longer deal for more money, but you know, I'll never forget my uncle taking me to Twins games, and so I think I'm just going to head to Minnesota because of nostalgia.
Dykstra yelled at me from the dugout. I want to go back to Philadelphia.
The whole Sherman rationale, and I think this is part of the only rationale, is the worry that the Phillies are going to be hamstrung long-term by signing these two guys. But yet in these same articles, they go on and on and on about how the Phillies have virtually no payroll commitment after the 2020 season. Like, no payroll commitment. So how much are these guys really going to hurt you long-term when you have no payroll commitment? And it's not just Joel Sherman. For 2019, you sign these guys because they're 25 and or 26 years old, and you have them for 5 to 7 years. They're just entering their primes. You're going to get these guys just as they're entering their primes. This is a move for 2020 and 2021 and 2022 and 2023, provided that the baseball strike doesn't stretch into 3 years after the next CBA comes around. So this is the whole point. I don't understand like this myopic vision of, okay, well, we're just going to improve the team for 2019. You know, we don't want to worry about Harper and Machado. It's people are overthinking this. The people are way overthinking this because they need something to write about. You sign Bryce Harper or Manny Machado because free agents like this don't happen.
And what if Mike Trout watched the Eagles game today and he exploded and there's just a small smoking pile of dust where the best player in baseball used to be? Did the Phillies plan for that? I mean, you could write there, and they will write these same columns when Mike Trout is going to be a free agent and the Phillies are mentioned as a team, as a possible team for him to land with. And they could write the same column then that, well, do they want to do that? Because in 2025, this player is going to be available and they're going to want to have payroll flexibility for the if you're constantly planning for the future, then you're never going to win now. And yeah, it's just this contrarian devil's advocate role that serves nothing and does what you said. It fills the space they need to fill until something actually happens in baseball.
Anything could happen at any time.
Right.
Anything right. At any point. Anything could happen to any pitcher or hitter, no matter how much money they're being paid or not. And so maybe just live for the moment. Do what you can to make your team better at this time and for as far in the future as you can conceive of. Why not just do that? The money, he can't take it with him. I think John Middleton knows he can't take it with him. If he wants to spend it and enjoy it while he's here, he needs to do it now on these players.
You know what we're definitely going to learn this offseason is whether John Middleton is someone who puts his money where his mouth is, or is somebody who just enjoys whipping people into a frenzy and getting the attention that comes from that. Because now he's in a position where he's going to be either one of those things or the other. If they don't make the kind of deals that he knows he's putting in people's heads by saying more and more ridiculous quotes, then this is going to be a disaster. They're going to have a hard time getting people come out to Phillies games, even if they sign every Michael Brantley on the market without getting Harper and Machado. This is too big of an idea now. So if he wants to be the new George Steinbrenner, then he's set himself up to be. But now he's got to get the players that George Steinbrenner would have gotten.
Well, that's the thing. When he said what he said to USA Today this week, that was the first thing that popped into my mind. People are going to think he's talking about signing Harper and Machado with those comments. And he had to know that. He had to know when he said that about spending money, maybe even in a stupid way, that people were going to think Harper and Machado. That's the immediate place that people were going to jump to. And whether he meant to do that or not, whether that was the intended consequence or not, that's where people's minds are now. And you're exactly right. The expectations have been raised. And it's not a great bargaining position to put yourself in if you are the owner to basically say, we're going to spend a ton of money. And, you know, we might be stupid about it. But
how many weeks ago did...
Like, what bargaining are you doing? These guys know how much they're worth. The market knows how much they're worth. At this point, it's whoever's going to offer the most... with the most money, the most attractive package, the most, you know, beneficial and attractive perks, with the most little Christmas tree things you can put on it. How many opt-outs? Like, this is the Phillies have to put together an attractive offer, but every team is going to do that. No one who isn't serious is going to do that. You think the White Sox are in this for, you know, and giggles? I think they're actually serious about wanting to sign one of these guys. And They are.
I said in a tweet, I think the White Sox might be the biggest competitors for Harper. I really do think that. I feel like they want to. They might be willing to spend as much as the Phillies for Harper. Now, I mean, it's who knows, you know. But I certainly wouldn't discount a team like that. We've seen great players sign with losing teams and help those turn those teams around because of the money. I will say one other thing with regard to Sherman and Olney, and that is, I do understand that national baseball writers don't necessarily understand exactly. Don't understand the Phillies exactly the same way we do. They don't watch the Phillies. They're not as tuned in to what this team actually needs. What this team needs more than anything else, and we've said it, are hitters, but they need superstars. This team needs superstars more than they need an aging Josh Donaldson, who might be a 2 or 3 win player at third base. They need more than just, you know, being able to afford Marwin Gonzalez. And hey, listen, they get Patrick Corbin, and that's a great starting pitching signing. But they need young superstar franchise players. And you have two of them sitting here, and you can buy them. And you just have to basically sell yourself and give them more money than anybody else is willing to. And you've got yourself two franchise cornerstone players that maybe this team isn't capable of developing right now. And that's the whole point. They see a Phillies team that went 80-82, that struggled down the stretch, that you can look on Fangraphs and you can see where the areas where these teams struggled. But when you have to really get to know this team and know where the holes are and know what's needed before you can really understand exactly what this team should do right now.
How many weeks ago was it that Andy McPhail came out and had that press conference and everyone said, oh, he's tempering expectations about them signing?
Yeah, it was a week after the season.
Yeah, I mean, if that's truly what his purpose was out there, how much hair do you think he has left when John Middleton starts out and says that kind of stuff? Like that it does make their job probably a lot harder because now they have this owner who seems to revel in the fact that he can get people excited about his baseball team. So it's gonna be interesting, and we're definitely going to come to some conclusions about the owner who decided a couple of years ago to take a more vocal role in the operations of his team.
By the way, I'm not taking the Mets roster over the.
Yeah, I'm not
roster.
Taking Michael Conforto right. over. Reece Hoskins
we can all be agreed
either,
on that. Yeah,
who
Michael
would
Conforto
do that?
Over Reece Hoskins. Yeah,
are you no Michael Conforto? The Mets won't even put their best roster on the field. They have players languishing in the minors right now who could be useful. They're just, you know, dudes they're not giving a chance. If not in the minors, it's like dudes that they just have on the bench. It's Dom Smith. They're just dudes they're not giving a chance. Those guys barely even exist. And Joel Sherman would still take them over. Like, he's got New York brainworms. Like, it's... You know, we have this great Bryce Harper and Manny Machado for you. Oh, yes, but have you seen the Mets roster? I really think that these scrappy nothings that the Mets have found and cleaned off like ruffians from, you know, what is that? Fagan and I'm thinking Oliver's company now, which is obviously not what I want.
Oliver Twist.
Well, it drove me crazy that. Yeah, Oliver Twist.
Yes, Oliver Twist. Like, yeah. Cleaned them off. Like, they are diamonds in the rough, all of them, and they are clearly morally better than any team that you could buy from the open market. How dare you?
Maybe
buying a team with money, not like the Yankees didn't do that for years, Joel.
Yeah. No, yes, I get it. And, you know,
brainworms, man. Just do it.
You look at the Mets record against the Phillies and the run differential, and that's probably where you get an argument like that. But you got to look at it more than that, man. Come on, buddy. Well, listen, a couple other things before we wrap up here. We wanted to take a couple of minutes to applaud Phillies manager Gabe Kapler and his fundraising efforts for what's going on in California with the wildfires, and which has just become an absolutely insane story with the deaths and the number of missing, especially in the northern part of the state. As all of you listening probably know by now, Kapler and his family lost their home in, I believe it was one of the Southern California wildfires, but... They're starting to get these fires under control, but it's going to be a massive cleanup effort and recovery effort, Liz. And Kapler is using his time online and his Twitter feed and some other areas to really kind of help build things up here and get people to donate and get involved.
Yeah, I mean, he's also, like, a lot of people are showing up for him. He's giving away Rhys Hoskins signed baseballs. Tom McCarthy has offered to add a prize of a booth visit for a winner of the sort of the raffle he's running right now for people who donate to the California Community Foundation, their wildlife relief fund. If you go to his Twitter, you can see it's at Gabe Kapler. He said, if you donate, send him a screenshot of your receipt and your name will go in for the drawing. If you donate elsewhere, volunteer, drop off supplies, send a picture of that and you'll be entered. You know, usually they don't give out, you know, visits to the booth. You know, they only do that for like the Phillies auctions. They usually, you know, that's not something they just give away willy nilly. Like, I have a feeling that more people will step up and participate. The winner of the booth visit will also throw out the first pitch for that day's game. It's a random drawing that'll take place on 11/21. So get in.
That's
on
really
that.
Cool.
Donate some money to the California Community Foundation, their Wildlife Relief Fund. So do this. People have lost, like, imagine just your home no longer being there. Like, you can imagine it burned, but imagine it was assumed by aliens and you have nothing. This is what a lot of people are dealing with. It is inconceivable to even think about. And so if you have anything that you can give, I think it would be a great way to show Gabe Kapler that you care about something that's very important to him.
Well, obviously it is very important to him because it's personal, and some of these, you know, efforts that he's doing are really tremendous. And we all know, listen, I none of us know Gabe Kapler personally to a real close degree. We've all had contact with Cap outside of baseball and all this kind of stuff, but just little bits here and there. None of us really, you know him really closely. But I think whatever you think of him as a manager, he seems like a really good dude. You know, really a caring guy who is trying to do what's best for his neighbors, for people in his state, and just to be a good citizen. Please get on Gabe Kapler's Twitter timeline and get involved and donate and do all that to help people out in California, because it is an absolute really no better word than disaster. I know it is a natural disaster, but in every sense of the word, it is that. Please do that. And one last thing before we get out of here, guys. You know, every Thanksgiving, whenever anybody's doing a podcast like this or doing articles or something like that, they do a "What are we thankful for?" kind of thing. I don't really want to do that. I want to just kind of get away from baseball entirely here for a second. I love Thanksgiving. I think Thanksgiving is the ultimate men's holiday, but it also can be the ultimate women's holiday too. But I think for men, it's kind of one of those days where I know it's a day that when I was a single man and I had no responsibilities whatsoever, it was a day of eating and football and sleeping on the couch. Now as a dad, I'm making dinner and I'm cleaning and I'm taking care of the kids and all that stuff. So Thanksgiving is still awesome, but it's mostly for the meal now. I don't get to watch football anymore on Thanksgiving. It's all for the food. And so everybody has their own favorite side dishes for Thanksgiving. Their own things that they love and some of the side dishes that people hate. So I want to go around the room. Favorite Thanksgiving side dishes? I did not. By the way, I sprung this on Liz and Justin. There was absolutely no conversation about this before the show whatsoever. I didn't want to give them time to think about it. So I'll start. I'll give you my favorite side dish. And it's a polarizing one because I know people who absolutely hate this side dish. But I'm a stuffing man. I love stuffing, especially if you've got turkey gravy on the stuffing. Give me a big – I need a whole separate – it doesn't have to be a full-size plate, but I need at least one separate dish next to me that's loaded with stuffing with gravy on it. to make sure that I have that throughout the meal.
Stuffing is tremendous. There's absolutely, yeah. Is that as polarizing as you're making it sound? I had no idea.
There are some people who hate stuffing, and I don't understand. It's like it's flavored bread comes with herbs, and you can put sausage in it.
It's wet bread. Have some warm wet bread is what it says to me. I am not a stuffing fan. I do not listen. I don't fault anyone for liking it. I just don't want to eat it. Get it away from me. It's gross.
See, Justin? I told you.
That's disgusting. I mean, there's not really a food, certainly not a Thanksgiving food, that I don't like. As soon as the gobblers at Wawa became available, I not only was eating them, I was texting my friends about them and was literally having a conversation about Wawa. Not about a story that happened at Wawa, but just about Wawa, when suddenly the Jimmy Butler trade broke and suddenly I yelled, oh, in the middle of a gas station. So there's no Thanksgiving food you can't put on a sandwich or a plate in front of me and that I won't enjoy. But that being said, John, I've been a mashed potatoes guy since day one. There's something about taking a root vegetable and aggressively smashing it onto the bottom of a bowl and then serving it as a hot pile of its mushed former self that I don't know, just appeals to me. I like food you can pile up. That you can make mountain out of, and then it serves as a base for the rest of it. So I can just stick a turkey leg in there with the bone sticking out. Got the cranberry sauce on the one side. Got my stuffing just to add to the starch count. My family does a pretty good job of keeping it versatile. So you got your standbys, but then you got a couple of new stuff people were trying. And there's not a lot of stuff I turned down on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's a Thanksgiving side that I don't like, and I'm sure there's a
For me, it's just stuffing. It's just stuffing for me that I don't like.
All right,
we don't do a traditional Thanksgiving at my house. I unfortunately won't be there to have it this year, but we do an Italian Thanksgiving. So let me give you a snapshot of the Thanksgiving at the Rocher house. So we essentially spend the day, whenever we're not having our big meal, we are eating either dessert or a variety of cheeses and cured meats, as well as dips. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we start the day. And then we have our first course is homemade wedding soup, Italian wedding soup. Our second course is cheese and ricotta cheese and meat stuffed savory crepes with homemade marinara.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And then for the third course, we have the turkey. We have sweet potatoes. Not really a vegetable. It never really occurred to me. We don't really do vegetables. But my favorite side dish is our cranberry salad, which is cherry jello, lemon jello, pineapple, cranberries, walnuts, and celery. I know that doesn't sound great, but it all goes together so well. And you have it on the fork with the turkey and some gravy, and it's the best.
Are you guys dark meat or white meat turkey?
Dark meat.
Oh, that's the wrong
I used
answer.
To go.
Liz.
I used to go light meat.
Yeah.
But I definitely throw a couple of both on there. And honestly, whatever other meat's lying around. I've been places where there's ham and duck and or different ways the turkey has been cooked, where it's been grilled or roasted, or you know, I'll survey my options and typically take a bit of everything.
See, I'm a white meat.
Just include meat.
Yeah, that's right.
This is all part of my meat theme. I'm leading up to a meat themed podcast that's going to be joining our Good Fight Family podcast.
Yeah.
It's going to be nice to meet you with Justin Clue.
That's awesome.
Just famous with you and various types of meat.
I'm just smelling meats, but I'm not saying what they are or describing them. I'm just yeah, that's a good one too. All right, what's next?
Today we're going to talk about pork butt.
Today we're going to talk about nothing, and you're going to help hear me smell meats that are cooking in my oven.
Today I'm shoving just up my nose.
I had some other stuff to talk about, but we got to end on nice to meet you with Justin Clue. I think that's going to wrap it up for episode number 232 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Liz Rocher and Justin Clue for once again coming with me on a Sunday night. talking some Phillies baseball with you. Listen, folks, if you haven't done so, please do us a favor. Head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating for the show and a review on iTunes. That helps new people find the podcast in a big way. And leave a review for this podcast, for continued success, for the Dirty Inning, or for all of us all in one place. But we will also read some of the more entertaining reviews on the podcast as well. So again, go to Apple Podcasts, and if you have a couple of minutes and would be willing to do that, that would be great. Everybody, enjoy your Thanksgiving. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.